transplanted Tucsonan Edie Girolam describes herself as a freelance writer, editor, and gadabout. Her new book, Getting Naked for Money, An Accidental Travel Writer Reveals All, is a memoir with highlights from more than three decades as a travel writer, with adventures set in Mexico, the United Kingdom, and Egypt, among other places, including an eye-opening stop at a clothing-optional resort in Palm Springs.
Let's go for the subtitle first, so people don't get entirely the wrong impression. It's An Accidental Travel Writer Reveals All. So it's a metaphor, but it's an actual incident of going to a nudist resort on assignment for a woman's magazine. So the first chapter of the book tells the story of how I got an assignment for More magazine to go to a nudist resort of my choice because I guess at that time nude travel was sort of trendy. And so I was asked to go there undercover, as it were, and uncovered.
Ironic, yes.
Yes. So it was a strange experience and one that I couldn't entirely tell the truth about in the magazine article. So that's where the title comes from.
There's a few dozen adventures in the book all told, but does the nudist camp experience still rate as one of your strangest adventures?
Absolutely. It's something that if you had told me, you know, when I decided I wanted to be a writer, that I would take my clothes off in public and go to a nudist resort, I would have said, are you kidding? I'm not the most modest person in the world, but I'm also not the type of person who would consider myself that adventurous, but I discovered that I am that adventurous when it came to getting a good story.
What percentage of your career as a writer has been based around travel writing?
I mean, it's hard to say because I was always somewhat of a generalist and I dabbled in a lot of different topics, but it's really only been since I moved to Tucson that I became a travel writer. So that was 1992. And till 2004, I was pretty much full-time travel writer. That was my primary genre of writing. So
it sounds like travel came easily to you. There weren't a whole lot of anxieties for you to overcome to pursue this job, or were there?
There are always anxieties. I mean, I'm
some of us.
Yeah, I should say there's in certain ways an irony that somebody who was anxious about travel and, you know, anxious about pretty much everything should end up traveling for a living. But, you know, it was compounded by worry that I wouldn't do the assignments right, that I had to prove myself at every time. And, you know, getting there at the right time, getting there at the right place. I didn't understand the distances involved in a lot of cases. You know, and the more I did it, the more I realized I enjoyed traveling on my own because I didn't have to worry about other people that I traveled with not enjoying what I needed to do.
But you pick up friends along the way. That's one of the entertaining things is the revolving sidekicks that come in and out. So tell us about one of your so-called travel sidekicks and how that came to be.
Well, my friend Terry, who was the first person I met in Tucson, really, she worked at Flandreau, and she was a PR person there. And she was the best PR person in that she was not the queen of spin. She was very honest. She knew her subject matter completely back and forth. And she also knew Mexico because she grew up in Tucson, in the Tucson area. So she was the one who came down with me on two trips to the Copper Canyon. Once I went by myself and the second time I went with her. And we ended up at a town in the bottom of the Copper Canyon called Batapilas, which sounded really great in the descriptions. And when we went down there, it was completely dry and, you know, one sad looking orange tree. I guess it was described as lush and filled with wildlife. And maybe that happens at different times in the year, but not when we went down there.
I feel like in the book that Egypt comes across as a place that you found a lot of enthusiasm for.
I loved Egypt from the time I was a kid and went to the Brooklyn Museum, which has a wonderful Egyptian collection. And it's kind of sad, the poor Brooklyn Museum. Well, now that Brooklyn is hip, maybe Brooklyn Museum has found its own, but it has one of the best Egyptian collections in the country. But compared to the Metropolitan Museum, just a subway ride away, it's kind of overlooked. But when I was a kid, it was I went with my mother maybe once a month, and I just loved the Egyptian halls. It was quiet and serene, and these towering statues of pharaohs, and it was all very stylized. I love the way they looked also. They're, you know, in the chaos that is, you know, growing up anywhere, and in Brooklyn, it was, there was just something soothing about everything, except for the mummies. Mummies were really creepy, and I tried not to look, but...
Well, did contemporary Egypt disappoint you, or did
No.
it live up to your dreams?
It did not disappoint me. I won't say that it was exactly what I imagined. The pyramids of Giza are at the edge of Cairo, so it's kind of like if you imagine the pyramids being in Queens, someplace in, you know, in the suburbs. But that's one vista that you look at. If you look in the other direction, there's this vast desert that could have looked like it looked thousands of years ago. And some places like Luxor and the tombs were everything that I imagined, because you walk into these vast temples and the buildings rising up above, and, you know, architecture over thousands of years. And it was, you know, it was chaotic. It was crazy. When you read about these places in books, it all seems very quiet. But that being said, just something about the desert, which is probably why I'm here, and the Middle East, specifically in Egypt. I never quite understood why it felt like home, but it did. There's something about the desert that, you know, I always say maybe it was my people wandering for 40 years in the Sinai. It's somehow ingrained in my DNA.
And now Edie Girolam shares an excerpt from her book.
We'd planned to have breakfast at Desert Shadows the following morning, a Monday, even though the idea of the staff accidentally spilling scalding coffee in my lap sounded no more appealing than brushing up against hot buffet stations. Finding the dining room shuttered, we went to the front desk, where we learned morning meals were served only on weekends. We would have to fend for ourselves until lunchtime. In fact, we were told that if we wanted to dine Shea Desert Shadows in the evening, we would have to order our entrees in advance, and they would appear on our bill whether or not we turned up to eat them. Odd. Even odder. The only two main course options was steak and salmon. Didn't naturism and vegetarianism go hand in hand? Proto-nudists Adam and Eve had followed a plant-based diet before losing their innocence. Then again, they would have been better off on a strict paleo regimen, eschewing the apple and sautéing the serpent instead. Dinner order placed, Nikki and I got dressed and headed for a nearby coffee shop, picking up a few supplies for lunch too. Finally, determined to survey a larger nudist sample, we took the plunge into the activities pool, which wasn't very active. Many of the weekend disrobers we'd observed the day before had defected, leaving only the hardcore nudists, mainly men in their 40s and up. I was relieved not to have to chat with any naked teenagers, but sorry that the current range of interview subjects was so narrow. Still, the natives were friendly. Nikki and I easily fell into conversation with a number of naked guys. We learned that we'd arrived too late on the previous day to catch the pool volleyball game, darn, and that we'd missed the in-the-buff karaoke on Saturday night, double darn. The revelation that we were nudism newbies brought out the solicitousness in the men, who expressed several variations on the theme of, "You'll never want to go back to wearing clothes again." But maybe it wasn't solicitous so much as salaciousness.
Edie Girolam's new book is Getting Naked for Money, An Accidental Travel Writer Reveals All. She'll be one of hundreds of authors participating in the 2017 Tucson Festival of Books, which happens Saturday and Sunday, March 11th and 12th, on the University of Arizona campus. Also next week, Edie Girolam begins teaching a five-week course in memoir writing at the Tucson Jewish Community Center. Information is available at tucsonjcc.org.